Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
Hey, what's going on, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, makers, artists, filmmakers, designers, and coders who are on a mission of bringing their ideas to life by creating new things and getting their work to work. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast, challenge your assumptions about what is possible, and chase big ideas so you can become who you were born to be. Whose life are you living? The life others have created for you or the life you are making for yourself? This is the foundational question of my conversation with Sarai Johnson as we go cliff diving into what it means to be human, understanding our true selves and wholeheartedly showing up every day. Sarai is the business alchemist for Melanie Spring Productions, and she shares extensively about her journey from the world of nonprofits to where she is at today, working with other people and making things happen. We also talk about what it takes to pivot in both personal and professional settings, what transformation requires of us, and how we must honor human time as much as possible. Show notes and links to resources mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/299. You'll also find links to stream the show on the major podcast platforms and an opportunity to sign up for my email newsletter, The Curiosity Lab. Each week, I send out some thoughts on curiosity, along with books, videos, podcasts, and other resources blowing my mind as well. Sarai, welcome to Getting Work to Work. Why don't you share a little bit about who you are and the work you do?
Ooh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Well, I am a business alchemist and audacious leader. I work with Melanie Spring at Melanie Spring Productions, where we do a lot of public speaker training. So we help people show up for themselves and for others in really powerful, authentic ways.
Wow. That sounds like an awesome job.
It's the absolute best thing in the whole wide world.
One of the things that I really appreciate is you are a masterful namer of things. As your title says, you're a business alchemist, and you use phrases like audacious leader, audacious souls. What's your secret to naming things?
Oh, that, you know, I think I was kind of born with a weird naming thing. Just it came with me into this world, I suppose. So all of my stuffed animals and toys when I was a kid had super weird names that I still remember and love, right? So I had this mouse named Shungi and a Barbie doll that had like a permanent name of Piok. So these are just things that I do. But as far as these names go, really, I think that for me, naming is a form of poetry, really. And I used to be a songwriter when I was younger and spent a lot of my time thinking of beautiful ways to say things. And so I think that's probably where it comes from. But with my particular title, especially with the business alchemist title, it really for me is about the idea that business is full of dross and gold. And so I see it as a way to describe the work that I do, which is to kind of take all of the really exciting and really cool aspects of business, as well as all the boring parts, and then put them all together and make something truly magical.
Wow.
So that's what that's about. And then for Audacious Souls, I actually came across that one with the help of a coach I was working with. Her name is Kelly Deals, and she's amazing in general. But she, for me, was really helpful in helping me kind of name my people and understand who these people are that I really want to work with and be with. And the word audacious kind of kept coming to me. And when I looked it up in the thesaurus, which is also my favorite book in the world, I was like, oh yeah, this is it. So it's like brave, courageous, cheeky, fearless, irreverent. I'm like, okay, yeah, let's check that. That's my people. So yeah, so I talk about audacious souls that way and audacious leadership that way, because I think it requires us to cut through the noise and show up in a really big, bold way.
Yeah. What I like about what you described too is it's not only about finding your people, it sounds like, but finding what makes you come alive as well.
Oh yeah, right. What is the thread that ties me to my people is a lot what that's about.
Wow. That's awesome. As you're describing audacious, I'm just like jumping up and down going, yes, yes, that's it.
Perfect. Good. Perfect. Well, you must be an audacious soul. Good for you.
I think I am, because I'm really resonating with that.
Awesome.
And just, I resonate just to, with, you know, just the title of business alchemist as well. And how did you come to own that title?
Well, when I started working with Melanie, we were trying to find a title for me. We're using a system called EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System, that was written about in a whole bunch of different books, but one in particular, Traction by Gino Wickman. And, and in that process, or that kind of system, he describes this really key relationship between a visionary and an integrator. And the visionary is the person who like has the big idea and is driven to kind of live somewhat elevated, if you will, kind of on the forefront of things and is the face of things. And that is very clearly Melanie in our work together. And for me, being the integrator, it's so much about taking those big ideas and the dream and the vision and bringing it down to earth and like making sure that those wheels hit, like if we're landing a plane, right? So we're that's sort of my work is to make sure that everything that Melanie dreams up and that we create together can actually come to life in the world and be really something meaningful for people, as well as really create a solid, long-lasting business.
Yeah. Did you ever have a moment where you were both visionary and integrator?
Okay. Between Melanie and I don't know that we've totally gotten there. I've only been working with her full-time since March, so it's just been 3 months or so.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, the reason why I love EOS so much and this integrator visionary relationship is largely because my last position where I was like the number two was really muddled in that way. And so between my executive director, I was in a nonprofit, my executive director and I think we were both things all the time. And it got really hard to move anything forward because we were both visioning and integrating and not doing any of it well.
That sounds frustrating.
I could tell you so many stories, and I basically have an entire blog dedicated to talking about those stories.
That's awesome. So as you don't have to worry about the visionary aspect as much, and you can focus solely on being an integrator, how close would you say that you are to the work that you do and the work that you want to be doing?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So before I started working with Melanie, I was doing nonprofit consulting for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And 1 year into it, I was like, yeah, I definitely don't want to do this anymore. Wow. But because I had written a book about strategic planning and I had, you know, I was kind of visible and I kept getting more nonprofit consulting jobs all the time. And it was what was paying my bills. And so I spent about 3 or 4 years really looking for like, what is my actual thing? Mm-hmm. And it took a long time to get to the point where I was like, well, actually what I do is help people show up. And I found that I had been doing contract training with Melanie for Speak with Confidence, which is our kind of flagship bi-yearly retreat for people who want to be public speakers. Mm-hmm. And at the last Speak with Confidence, not the last one, but the one in October of 2018, it was so clear to me, oh, this is my thing. I help people show up in really an energetic way and help them kind of take off all of the masks that they feel like they need to wear to protect themselves and that all that kind of stuff so that they can really be with people. That's what I do. And then I was like, well, cool. That's nice to know. What do I do? Like, am I a show up coach? Like, that doesn't seem like a thing I want to sell. That's annoying. So it really kind of dovetailed in with where Melanie was going with her company and what was happening with that. And when I found out about the integrator role, I was like, I literally was like wiggling in my seat and raising my hand and going, pick me, pick me, pick me. This is what I do. This is my thing. So honestly, I feel like so in the zone. It's like what my high school band teacher used to call being in the pocket. You know, you're like right in the beat. Not behind it, not in front of it, but just like really grooving with it. That's what I feel like is happening with my work right now. And it is amazing to feel like I'm in the exact right place doing the exact right thing.
Yeah. It sounds like one of the things that you talked about at a recent event where I heard you speak was at Pretty with Purpose, and you talked about the three brains, mm-hmm. heart, brain, and gut. And it sounds like there's a lot of alignment between all three.
Yeah, right. Well, I had spent so much of my life only living with my head brain intact. You know, that's what most of us do because we're sort of told, hey, your feelings and your intuition don't matter. So maybe just don't worry about those things so much and just, you know, make a pros and cons list if you need to make a decision about something. So right. Your brain can just overreact to everything. So I did that for about 35 years or so, maybe a little less, but around there mm-hmm. before I started reconnecting in with my body. And yeah, I think it's honestly for me, one of the most important things has been really dropping in to my guts and into my heart and, mm-hmm. and feeling through things and listening to the wisdom that's there, because knowing that I have that already within me is so powerful, because it means that I get to make choices in my life that I wasn't allowing myself to make for a really long time.
Wow. That's powerful.
It is powerful.
I like how you whispered that. What's interesting too, when thinking about the three brains, is like we do really well, as you mentioned, with our head brain. What's the difference then going into the heart and then leading into the gut?
Yeah, well, I think about it as kind of like they all work really well together mm-hmm. and they also all have their own unique job to do. So the way I see it is I like to start with my gut brain. I think that is sort of our primal center of like instinct and intuition that allows us to really get in touch with what we already know, but we don't know we know it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And I think this, you know, one thing I do think is important to note is that we do have full like neural networks in our heart and our gut. Mm. And these are like legit wisdom sources. And so I think it's really important for us to acknowledge that and be with that as well. So when I'm thinking about your gut brain, it is that, as I mentioned, like intuition and being able to have that instinct and know, oh, this, my body feels this way, which is telling me something needs to be done here. And that's usually where we do start with our kind of understanding of, oh, something needs to change or something's not working or this is great or whatever it is. But we oftentimes don't allow that to filter up to our decision-making kind of head brain. So then if we're able to move it up, we also then can check in with how our emotions are. Our heart is sort of this place of like transmuting our instinct and intuition into what, you know, what do we love? Like where, who are we connecting with? How are we connecting with ourselves? How are we feeling about this thing? And like really kind of getting into allowing ourselves to experience our emotions without then subjecting everyone else to the processing of those emotions, right?
Yeah.
So often we ignore our emotions or like we wrap them up in more emotions about the emotion. And it's like, oh, I'm disappointed that this didn't happen. Oh, I'm so dumb and mad that I'm disappointed by this. I should have known better. Oh gosh, I'm so depressed that I'm so mad about being so disappointed. And so we like keep snowballing our emotions until they're almost this like impenetrable giant ball we're carrying around with us. And it makes us really reactive or it makes us numb. So we have to find a way to like allow ourselves to let the experience of being with those simple emotions of like, I feel disappointed. Okay, I'm going to feel that way and allow that to be what it is. And it will pass, but it's just really letting it kind of flow through your body. So in some ways, that's where I feel like your heart brain kind of comes in, partly in processing emotions, partly in acknowledging them, and partly in honestly just recognizing that you're human and that you know, other people are too. So if you are having trouble with other people, this is another place where our heart brain has to come into play as well. Like, so we can have compassion for other people and empathy and also for ourselves. So really kind of striking that balance. And then of course our head brain, like we all know that one. We're all best friends with our head brains. We're up there all day. So yeah, I mean, that's decisions and knowing stuff and learning things and all of that. But really to be fully integrated, we have to bring all three of those brains online and truly check in with them all the time.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because as you're describing the three different brains, you know, in business, we only really celebrate and elevate the head brain. Mm-hmm. And then we, if you're emotional, uh-oh. And if you follow your intuition and gut, you know, you're a bad business person, you know, you know, right. That's kind of the messages that we send. And I really do love this integrative approach to all three of them, because we are human beings and we have all three of these. So I just absolutely love that.
Me too. It makes life so much fuller too, because we don't have to shut pieces of ourselves off or like cut them off even worse, you know, to be able to function in society. We're able to show up again as fully as ourselves and being completely solid in all of our power instead of having to be, you know, fragmented.
Yeah. Fascinating. One of the things that I'm fascinated with is how to pivot from one business idea or pursuit to another without totally messing with your head. Because I think for creative people, we get our identity so completely wrapped up in what we do. I mean, it's not exclusive to creative people, but I mean, I am an artist. I am this. I am a musician. I am a filmmaker. And I think when we do that, we miss so many opportunities, both good and bad. So if you were to look through the different pivots that you've made in your career, how have you practiced, I guess, the fine art of the pivot?
Oh my gosh, you are so spot on with that idea of us being overly invested in our identities of what we do, right? So it's so much about, I'm producing this and I have this title. So therefore, someone else said I'm smart and important and you should listen to me. So it's really a way for us to externalize our value instead of really allowing ourselves to feel it inside, which is hard because that's our whole culture is made that way. Like we have celebrity culture. We want the people we celebrate are like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I just have to sidebar this for 1 second. I saw a keynote yesterday and the guy was hilarious and really engaging and great. And yet the whole keynote was about, oh, and I talked to Bill Gates or I talked to Larry King or I talked to whoever, like just name dropping 1,000,000,000,000 different celebrities, which, you know, good for you meeting all those people, like whatever. But what was interesting is I'm sure this guy has his own wisdom to share. Yeah. And a lot of the things he said were really meaningful and could be really impactful. But I think that he's still in that kind of cultural place of needing to get value from like our associations or from our external kind of connections or things we do. So pivoting for me did not come easy. And it really started when I still worked at the nonprofit I used to work at. We did community economic development and we decided to take on this audacious, if you will, project where we bought an old church in downtown Springfield, Oregon, which is where we were doing some downtown revitalization. And we decided to turn it into a food hub, which at the time was like the sexiest grant thing ever. So really like working in nonprofits, if people listening are hearing me, they will know if you work in a nonprofit that a lot of times you are looking for the next sexy grant thing because that's how you build your budget a lot of the time. So it's a funny cycle, but I have a lot of opinions on that. I will spare you today, but someday, who knows? So we built this thing and it was supposed to be kind of like an aggregation place. It was supposed to be a commercial kitchen where food businesses would come and rent the kitchen space by the hour. So they'd have a sanctioned commercial kitchen to produce their food products and sell it in stores and things like that. So we had a whole program set up that way. Well, we launched, and of course, by the way, the whole time everybody's clamoring for it. Like all the food businesses that are going to use it are like, when are you opening? We need you so bad. Yay. And we finally are like, okay, we're ready. And then we fling the doors open and it's just crickets, right? Oh, nobody is paying us money to use this thing at all. And it was cheap. It was like 15 bucks an hour or something. I mean, it was not like chump change for people, but it was a reasonable business investment without having to create your whole own kitchen, which is expensive and very time consuming. So we had this model and we had put it in all of our business plans, AKA grants that we wrote, and it wasn't flying. What we came to find out was a lot of the time in our small town. So by the way, we built this off of existing models too. So it wasn't like we invented it out of nowhere. Right. So it's also a fallacy is like, oh, well, if you're just going to adapt something and put it somewhere else, all you have to do is really kind of follow this pattern. But I was following this pattern that was created in Portland and LA and Chicago and New York. And it doesn't really work in Springfield and Eugene, Oregon, where it's, you know, maybe combined in our whole county, it's like 375,000 people or something.
Right.
So we we found this to be a huge problem. And what was happening was people had this like incredible price sensitivity, because if they came in the kitchen and started using it, the only thing they were thinking while they were in there making their cashew nut butter or whatever was, oh my goodness, you know, I'm just running up my dollar signs by being in here. And so they would use the kitchen for like 2 weeks in the month, freak out, stop coming in for the second half of the month. And it was a nut. It was just awful. So what I realized then was, okay, well, like based on what these people are actually saying, the people using the product who are telling us with their actions, what they actually want and need, let's maybe try to listen to them. So we switched it to, you could buy lots of time. We turned the cafe into a restaurant incubator. We did a lot of different things. Well, we made so many shifts and worked so hard to communicate with our stakeholders who are using the building. Mm-hmm. It worked pretty well on the implementation side. On the management side, though, it was a nightmare because my boss was like, you need to pick a business model and go with what works. And I'm like, yeah, that would be so great. However, it just can't be like that. And really, the magic for me happened when I stumbled upon Eric Ries's book, The Lean Startup. Mm-hmm. And I read that book with my mouth wide open probably the whole time, because I was like, this is literally my life. Like, how did I not know this? And so, yeah, watch out, world. My boss got even sadder after that, because I was like, it's called Pivot or Persevere, yo. And she's like, I don't like this. But it made a big difference. You know, it helped for sure. And then I made the ultimate pivot there when I finally was, I don't even remember. Oh, no, there's a whole long story. I'm not going to tell it. But I will tell you this. I was burned out hardcore in my nonprofit career. And one day, some really just petty thing happened at work when I got back from, for once in my life, taking a vacation. I talked to three different people on my way through the door. They all wanted to gossip about this thing that was my business and not theirs. Mm-hmm. And I, the last person I was talking to, I finally was just like, I know you're trying to help and I love you and I have to go. And I like ran out of the building down to the river about two blocks away and sat on a bench for an hour filled with rage. Like I was so angry. And all of a sudden I realized I feel like this all the time. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea. I've just been feeling this way for years. And I knew I had to make a decision then. And it was the scariest decision for me, because I got to say, like, my job was so important to me and I loved what I did and I loved the mission of that organization and I loved the field of community economic development so much. I was Sarai Johnson, assistant director at NEDCO. Like, that was my whole thing. I didn't know if I would maybe just disappear if I quit. You know, what would I be or do after this? But I knew I had to. So that pivot was catastrophic for me in some ways, because I had to, I mean, it, the way that I talk about change all the time now is using this sort of cliff dive metaphor. And that one was like standing on the top of the cliff and feeling like, yeah, if I don't jump off of this, I'm going to either be pushed off or I'm going to die. Like there's just no more choice here. So I had to make the leap and I'm very glad I did. And then apparently I loved it so much. I also several months later, like, pivoted out of my marriage and pivoted out of my church that I was at and pivoted out of my religion altogether. So there was a lot of, oh, these things aren't working for me. So that was honestly like kind of on a personal level pivoting, but honestly felt very similar to the choices that I had to make in work as well.
Wow. Well, it sounds like there was, it's kind of like you burst through the dam and everything else kind of followed.
Yeah, it was like I used to kind of describe it as, I feel like I've been living inside a statue that other people made of who I'm supposed to be.
Wow.
And then when I started moving and like realizing I was just way too big to fit in that, it all started to crumble off, you know, and kind of comes crashing down. And it's a really interesting process because you have to relearn, like, who am I? Who have I always been? And how have I kind of shut that down? And like, how do I want to be now? And who am I now? And how do I want to show up? And so for me, it's been a lot of relearning and reconnecting and less about, I need to create myself from scratch. It's really just like, how weird am I? Oh, this weird? Great. I'm going to be that way.
You mentioned having to relearn. If you look back, how far back can you see who you are today? And, you know, is there like a big gap of time between what you see and who you were? I'm not sure if I'm phrasing that question right, but.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. I think, you know, the interesting thing that happens to me is I've always been a writer, like writing all kinds of things, journals and, like I said, songs and thoughts and dreams and all the things I want to do. You know, I write this stuff down and I kind of think about it as breadcrumbs now, because I'll open up an old journal and find a page and just be like, holy moly, that is just, I've just always been who I am, right? It's that kind of stuff. Oh, this is so always been a part of me and I didn't remember that. So it's really like, it's more about taking off the masks, taking off the statue pieces, and letting the person that I am underneath all of that kind of really come out. So it's not like I ever really lost myself. It's just that I was like, quiet you, and made myself shrink and fit into this other thing. Although underneath that, I've always been a total like goofy weirdo. It's just that I've had to try to fit that into the mold that other people have for me, instead of allowing myself to just be like, yeah, but this is just, I'm just going to always be a total weirdo and I'm going to make corny jokes and I'm going to laugh at my own jokes constantly and, you know, say weird stuff and swear a lot. So that's okay.
So is that what you would describe as a successful pivot, where you're no longer pushing yourself down, you're no longer shrinking to fit someone else's mold, but you're like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
Live with it.
I totally think so. And I also think it's an interesting kind of corollary, you know, just to sort of bastardize Eric Ries's wonderful work with the Lean Startup. I had my whole nonprofit business was called Lean Nonprofit, because I loved that process so much. So I adapted a lot to nonprofits, but it's also life. I mean, it really is like, in the whole idea around how do you do a lean startup or even a lean nonprofit is, how do you identify what the people that are using your product or service, what do they really need and want? Whether they know how to articulate that or not, what will they actually use? How will they use it? Observing that and then making changes to shift into that. Doing that for yourself is really looking at yourself as your customer. Like, who am I really? How am I responding to this? Why am I making these choices? What does that mean for me right now? You know, what do I need to be? This is a question I ask constantly. What do I need to have changed for me to be here wholeheartedly? Is it me? Is it something external to me? Is it something that's possible to change? And if it is, how do I ask for it, or how do I make that happen?
Wow. Wow. I'm just blown away by what you just said, because you're putting the responsibility on us, on ourselves.
To change our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not easy either. I mean, I just did a little breakout session yesterday at an event called Dive Deep to Fly High, something Audacious Leadership. I never remember my subtitles, so forgive me. But there's a whole thing in there that's about, it's that cliff dive metaphor I mentioned. It's like, part of it is, yeah, you take the leap and things are changing. Yeah, yeah, yay. And then you hit the water and you're like, what have I done?
I just belly flopped.
This isn't as awesome as I thought it was going to be. It's hard now. You know, then we have choices. Like, we always have choices to make at every single one of these places. So a lot of the times we'll try to like scramble, or we'll build ourselves a little island that's sort of this in-between place. But the real transformation comes in this awful place that nobody wants to be. Mm-hmm. So it's sad, because I'm always like, my methodology works, and it's the worst. I'm like, how do I sell this to people? Like, back when I was like, oh, I need to build a business with this. I can't and won't. I'm not doing that right now. I don't want to. But I do talk about it all the time, because it is so valuable. But it was the question of like, what do I tell people? Your life will, are you suffering right now? Would you like to suffer a little more in a different way and then be okay after that? Like, that's my infomercial, right? So there is this place, though, once you've hit the water, you go underwater. And sometimes when you go underwater, if you like are knocked off a boat when you're whitewater rafting, or if you're in the ocean and you get like knocked over by a wave, where you get disoriented and you don't know which way is up and you don't know how far down you have to go, like, it's just this really weird place to be. And our instinct is to just fight and thrash and like get somewhere. But in reality, the only way we can really interrupt patterns that we keep repeating, because I know that most of us are doing, it's almost like we have this one cosmic lesson to learn. And we do it over and over until we finally figure it out. But mm-hmm. this place of finding the bottom is the place where that happens, because it's the place where we do shadow integration, where we're like, oh, this thing I thought I hated is also part of me. And so I have to learn how to accept that and integrate it and give it its rightful place in my life. Like when I was going through my, you know, having left my business a year before, going through a divorce, having left my church, so I had like no, you know, people, because they don't mm-hmm. follow you out the door. My family was like, what are you doing? You're so weird right now. I can't even handle it. You know, I was alone-ish. I had some people who showed up for me and helped me. But what I had to recognize was like my shadow side, or the thing that drove me the nuts, is how you find your shadow. Here, what bothers you so much when you see it in other people? For me at that time, it was laziness and entitlement. I was like anti those things. I worked so hard all the time and I fought for everything I ever had. Right. But then there's also this space where like you have to rest. And that's not necessarily laziness, but to me it was. And I didn't have business coming in the door. I had to like get some temp jobs and, you know, do stuff that I didn't really anticipate myself having to do at that point in my life. Mm-hmm. And yeah, experiencing all of that never felt like a failure. It never felt like a setback. It always felt like, oh, this is a place where I have to be. Like it felt like I was sitting in a hallway waiting for the next thing, but I needed to be in that space of that in between so that I could come back together with the laziness and entitlement side of myself, right? Mm-hmm. Like yeah. rest and acceptance of receiving gifts, if that makes any sense. So that's yeah. like the light side of those things that I hated. And then I was allowed and able to integrate rest and receiving into my life again in a way that I never had before, because I had always been so resistant. So this happens, that can happen with anything. Like yesterday I was talking about it with leadership stuff. What do you hate in leaders? Oops, surprise. How are you like that? You know, oh, everyone's like, no, oh, why? But we are, you know, you hate a micromanager. Cool. Like what happens when something goes wrong on a project you're in charge of? You jump in there and you start doing everything for everyone and make sure everyone's doing everything and you make them check in with you extra, whatever. Like that, we all do the thing we hate a lot. Mm-hmm. So how do we see how that's working for us and how we can choose it or not choose it? It's like bringing it into the light and letting it be in our menu of things yeah. we can do or not do.
Wow. I mean, you've just painted a beautiful picture of the entire process of a successful pivot. I mean, diving, going underwater, recognizing your shadow self, embracing it, and then, you know, finding your bearing, finding where up is mm-hmm. so that you can then be there
yeah,
and not die.
Right. For sure. And not die and like get stronger for it.
Yeah.
And then also to recognize, I mean, this is the other thing that people are often disappointed with in my terrible methodology is not only do I have to sometimes suffer in this, like finding the bottom place, but mm-hmm. I also will do it again and again, because it is a J curve and it's like an eternal, endless, infinite J curve that happens from the time we're born until we die. Yeah. Like you'll go up, you're going to keep, you know, you get out of the water, you're finding your place, you're making it cool, you're going to a higher peak than you were at before, and then you'll eventually plateau again. Something will mm-hmm. have to change, whether that's internal, external, both, whatever. It can be huge. It can be tiny. It could be, you know, I changed everything. I quit my job and my husband and my whatever. I quit all that stuff. But there also are tiny things that I have to change all the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm having this attitude about this thing. Is that helpful to me? Not really. Okay, cool. Like I'd like to change that. So I'm going to observe it. I'm going to notice it as it comes up. I'm going to choose what I want to do with it instead of just, you know, letting it control me because I don't have a handle on it.
Yeah.
It can be a thought process. It can be a habit. It can be a routine. What's not working for me now? How do I want to shift that? And doing it in really small ways is awesome, because finding the bottom in a tiny pool is way easier than finding the bottom in your whole life.
But it sounds like, though, in your journey, you had to eventually find the bottom of your life mm-hmm. so that you could experience bigger pools.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And higher heights for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. which I don't think I had the freedom. And this is a big piece of it for most of us, is that mm-hmm. we really put a lid on our own growth a lot.
Yeah.
Because once we say, I am this thing and I do this job and therefore it is who I am, we then have officially limited ourselves. And not in the helpful way of, you know, when you're a creative and you're like, here are the boundaries of my creativity. It's a canvas. It's shaped like a square and I will now put paint and things on it. Like mm-hmm. that's good limitations. It allows us to paint a certain picture. And sometimes it's good for us to have that for a period of time, but there's always more. There's always some other canvas then to go onto, or there's some other way to grow into ourselves. So it's really like, how do we keep that lid just gently off to the side so that our pot doesn't boil over?
Yeah. Something that's coming to mind is like the web as a medium as well. So like back in the late 90s when web design started, you know, I don't know if you remember that far back where it said best viewed on a resolution of 800 by 600. So we designed a website to fit this perfect canvas of 800 by 600. But today there are an unlimited number of screen sizes, resolutions, and way to approach things. And people either embrace that or they're forcing themselves to think in predetermined screen sizes.
Yeah.
Because our brain can't actually comprehend infinity, but we almost have to in order to make sense of what's going on.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. That's a perfect example of that.
Mm. So you work with Melanie. How does she cause you to soar higher and higher and reach for higher heights? I mean, is it like when the two of you come together, it's like thunder and lightning in the sky because the gods are getting together and like having this powerful conversation?
Well, yeah, definitely. Yeah. We literally start thunderstorms all the time. And it's,
yes.
And I mean like for real, because last time I was in Denver, we had the coolest thunderstorm.
That's awesome.
I mean, the cool thing is I've been working by myself in my business primarily. Mm-hmm. I had a few people come in and out as sort of subcontractors on different projects or for a period of time, but I never had a real team. Mm-hmm. And I also was so burned out on management that I was kind of like, yeah, I don't really want that anyway. Mm-hmm. But coming in and working with Melanie and then starting to kind of gather our people and build our team out as well has been so awesome. And I really, just the other day put up a Facebook post and I said, like, I forgot I was made for this. Like, I forgot I was made for being a part of a team. And yeah, I love working with Melanie because, you know, we have this clear idea of her being the visionary and me being the integrator, where she can go and do all the leading edge stuff. And she can be the one with a great social media presence. And I can be like, cool, I don't want to do that. So I won't, unless it's like coordinated and someone tells me I have to, then sure. Right. Okay. But I don't like using social media so much just because for me, it's just not my thing, but you know, good. I'm glad it works for people. So there's that. But then I think it's also a matter of sort of finding this place where we connect in of, you know, here's the big idea and here's what she wants to have happen. And I'm like, that's enormous. Okay, what are the steps that we need to take in order to create that? And so my superpower is program design and process design and creating the systems and the ways to make all these things come true. And her superpower is like, being awesome and people like love her, you know, they want to flock to her and do what she wants them to do. And I'm like, that's great. That saves me a lot of time and energy. So she, you know, kind of leads, she does the marketing and the presence and the sales. Yeah. And then I do the, hi, welcome aboard. We will now do this thing, you know, so that's sort of nice because we have a pretty clear handoff. And of course it's still early in and we're still really small. So we're still building the capacity. We need to be able to divide out all the right roles. But I think we are getting into that sweet spot. And when we have a hiccup, it's like, oh, you know what happened? I just spent a whole bunch of time doing this stupid thing on ClickFunnels so that I could write marketing copy and then you hated it. And now, like, why was I even doing that again? I don't know. That shouldn't be my thing. And she's like, it's definitely not. So we can kind of work from there, you know?
Yeah. And it really speaks to the fact that when she's awesome, you are equally awesome when you're sticking to that integrator role.
Right, totally. And that's, and it's fun too, because I can make it what it should be for me. Like, mm-hmm. I still love getting up and speaking. I love doing a keynote. I love doing breakout sessions. Like, speaking is a big part. I love writing, all that stuff. Content development in lots of different ways is amazing, and I love it. Mm-hmm. And I like to do it in a much more like, hi, I'm here in front of you and I'm going to do this thing. That is my place that I love. And then I don't love all the, you know, the bells and whistles that go with that, like go with the being in the front. So I'd rather be there and be like, hi, I can do this thing. So that's one of the things that I really like about how we work together is we do these standing events that we hold ourselves, mm-hmm. where I have a clear role and a clear thing that I get to do there. And I, you know, doing some of the teaching, doing some of the training, et cetera. And I can do that stuff as well, kind of on my end, or speak locally or do whatever, without having to be the face of the whole organization. And I think that for me, a big pivot I always resisted and never quite did well was like pivoting out of lean nonprofit, the business I had that was paying all the bills, into whatever Sarai Johnson was. You know, yeah. I never could see myself really as the thing to sell, if that makes any sense.
It does.
But the stuff I talk about is still really important to me. So it's nice because I can integrate a lot of that into what we're doing while like Melanie is the thing we sell, basically. Mm-hmm. To put it crassly.
Well, it sounds like you've really embraced, to use a band metaphor, you've embraced being the bass player.
Oh, I was just telling my partner the other day how much I thought it would be fun to play bass.
There you go. Because you need a bass player. But oftentimes the bass player doesn't really stand out, but you know when they're not playing, you know when they're not present.
Totally. Yeah. Right.
Until it's time for the solo, then you're like, yes, bass solo, take one.
Bass solo is so awesome. Yeah. It's actually so funny that you would say that, because I was in bands all the time in college, and the most successful one was where I was like a co-lead singer. I wrote a lot of the songs, and then, you know, we had a lead guitar singer, and I played keys and sang, and it worked great. You know, doing it on my own, I never really cared. I think it's just for me, as I'm like, yeah, this is fine. I like being entrepreneurial. I like being an entrepreneur. I don't like working by myself. And I honestly have never cared about like any of the things that I could sell enough, like to do that as like my whole thing, if that makes any sense. It's sort of a funny spot, but it's just where I feel like I belong, is really working with other people and making things happen.
Yeah. So if you could travel back in time, how would you advise yourself to approach team differently?
Oh my goodness. You know, it's funny because I feel like every part of what I've gone through has been so important to get where I am.
Yeah.
So in a way, I'd just be like, if I could go back in time and see my former self and give any advice, it would be just chill. Like, it's going to be okay. Maybe like don't stay up all night writing grants for 8 years. Maybe that would be a good change. And also, I think, you know, one of the biggest realizations for me was back when I was working at that nonprofit and I was in management. And I had been managing people forever in different contexts, but I had hit a leadership plateau and I was really confused about what was going on. And we did DISC profiles, everything DISC. And mine was like, here are things that excite you as a manager and here are things that drain you as a manager. And all of them, I was like, oh. So I realized I'm working with a bunch of people who need step-by-step directions on how to do something when we're like building something totally new out of thin air, which is hard to give people step-by-step directions about how to do that. So that was interesting. So draining me is giving step-by-step directions, especially if I have to do it more than once. And also one of the things that it said in my report, I can't even remember where it was, but it was just this sidebar thing that was like, you think people have unlimited potential. And I'm like, yep, of course, patting myself on the back. And then it's like, but they don't.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what? But it sounds really cynical and mean and weird, but it's actually great. It was so good for me to read that and understand that about myself and about like what my style is. Because I always tell people, I have a wonderful plan for your life. I mean, I can see where they're going, and they're like, okay, cool, I guess. So it's really important for me to hold that lightly and to be okay with the fact that I might see other people's potential and I might want things for them that they don't want for themselves. So maybe I could just like back off a little bit and let them be a little more self-determined, since that's what I say I'm all about.
So you mentioned that you have a wonderful plan for everyone else's life. What's the wonderful plan for your life?
Well, you know, I'm so good at doing it for other people. I mean, the truth for me is that a lot of my approach to life at this time has become, especially over the last 5 years, very much about let's observe, let's see what's coming up, what's happening, what opportunities are there, who are my people to collaborate with. I feel really good about where I am right now. So it's cool because Melanie Spring Productions gives me a container for a ton of stuff that I've wanted to do forever. And in fact, it's funny, I have on my wall in my office the business plan I drew in 2018, which I say drew because it's like all colorful. And nice. I tried to put it in a spreadsheet and I was like, this is dumb. I'm just going to use my markers. But it's great because it has like the things that are important to me: fully honoring power, creative destructions and recreation, radical uselessness, oh, my favorite, burning scripts, healing rifts, living embodied, exploring, igniting, being grounded, strong, inspired, and then a list of books I want to write. Like, these are all things that I still do and get to do and get to express every day in a way that doesn't just depend only on me, like, hustling all the time and trying to be like, do you want me to coach you, please? Ah, you know, I'm able to do all the things that I love doing, that I'm magical at doing, because I have the framework for it and the container for it that I'm not just doing by myself, but I get to kind of come in and alchemize it, which is super great. So that's my plan for my life, is just to do it.
Yeah. One of the phrases that you mentioned at Pretty with Purpose is the phrase human time.
Yeah.
And that our society is not friendly to human time. So as you do all these amazing things, as you integrate and as you embrace being an alchemist, how does human time enter in to your life and work so that you can be radically useless at times?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. It is like it's a discipline. I mean, it's not even just a practice. It's a discipline to do it. And I'm still not really there. You know, I mean, I do it. I do way better than I used to. Mm-hmm. And I also recognize it way sooner when I make a misstep. So for instance, I went on a road trip this last week with my partner, and like, we live in Oregon. We drove up to Vancouver, BC, and did some stuff like that. Well, on the last day of my road trip, you know, everybody at work is like, oh, we have to launch this thing. We need this and this done. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'll do that. So I spent a whole day working on something that didn't even turn out well, that just was dumb. It was a stupid thing to do. Like, I don't even know why I did it, except for that I felt like pressured to do it, instead of saying, all right, I'll do it tomorrow. Or am I really the right person to do it? Or maybe we need to adjust some of these deadlines, all of which are perfectly reasonable options. Mm-hmm. I was like, cool, okay, I got this, you know, which really was me needing to feel like I'm okay by exerting myself and working, which is not the right impulse for me to do that from anyway. It's that. Then I immediately I'm like, oh, look what I just did. I just spent a day on my vacation. Now I'm cranky. Now I'm like bitter about it. I got feedback that was like annoying to receive, you know, it's just like, what, this is a whole domino effect. And so for me, a lot of it is about noticing, why am I, what is my motivation for doing this thing? Am I overworking because I think that's what's expected? Because it's very easy to get sucked into a culture like that. So how do I now, as the integrator, help create a culture in our organization that doesn't make people feel that way? And that allows us to be as, you know, wholly living our lives as possible without having to apologize for that. Because it feels like we have to, because that's what we have to do all the other places that we are. Right. So yeah, moving at the pace of human time feels really ridiculously slow compared to the pace that at least I know that I was used to living in. So for me, it's a lot of stuff about like just being mindful, making sure that I have to put on my calendar, like, eat lunch. And half the time I still don't pay attention to it. And then an hour later, I'm like, gosh, why am I so hungry right now? I'm so tired. Oh my goodness, I haven't eaten. That's dumb. So it's really like, really, again, just about how do we feed ourselves? How do we let ourselves be human? But recognizing the limitations of human bodies accepting that we have down days and like honoring that pace, because ultimately everything gets done. As long as we're choosing to do the right things, everything that needs to happen will happen. It's just, we also pile on a lot of extra frivolous stuff. And then we think that's all important too. So a lot of it is about selecting what's actually essential. What do I want to prioritize? Part of what I want to prioritize is spending time with people and having coffee with people and having lunch with people and being with the people I'm with, instead of, oh, well, like, I'm so busy. Sorry, I can't ever hang out with you until we have some big official thing in 3 months. You know, that's not what I want to do. So yeah, it's a lot of that kind of, how do I create this spaciousness in my life to be with people and honor the reality of flowing with life in a nicer way?
Yeah. Sounds like it can be a tough decision at times, but very important to do.
Yeah, it's so true. And also, I wonder oftentimes, like, what's my tally on choosing myself versus choosing everyone else? You know, that's a big one too. It's really asking that question.
Well, Sarai, this has been a fun, fantastic conversation. And the last question that I have for you is, apart from the Lean Startup and the Thesaurus, what was the last book or podcast that blew your mind?
Oh, good question. Okay. I'd say that probably the last book I told everyone to read and was like, this is unbelievable, you guys, oh my God, was Eastern Body, Western Mind.
Oh, wow.
By Anadeya Judith. It is so great because she talks about Eastern philosophy and religion. And actually, this doesn't enter into her book, but if she wrote it again, I bet that it could. A lot of like kind of polyvagal nerve information aligns really well with this sort of ancient chakra system. So she aligns the chakra system with Western psychology in a way that is truly like just eye-opening and useful. And I love it because it really is sort of that space of embodiment of things that also make sense to us because we're like, well, science and psychology, we like that stuff. So it's great. I love it. That book is amazing.
Do you ever feel dissonance between the past church life and then when you read books like that, where it's exposing you to new and wonderful things? Or is that too big of a question to end on?
I have a whole book about that I have to write.
Yes.
I'll give you the shortest answer that I possibly can.
No problem.
I was homeschooled for the purposes of, you know, for sure, because my mom wanted me to like grow up listening to Rush Limbaugh every day and, you know, leave and be a very devout Christian Republican. And so no offense to Christian Republicans, like it's fine. You can be whatever you want. For me, the weird side effect of being homeschooled in the way I was, which was, I was way older than my siblings. Like my parents basically, by the time I was in sixth grade, were like, here is a book, read it and write an opinion paper about it. So I was doing that forever. It really came down to when I was in college, I went to a Christian college, like conservative Christian college in my denomination. I was very committed to being sheltered and safe. And a professor of mine, nonetheless, said one offhand comment one day that completely changed the trajectory of my entire life, which was someone asked him who he was going to vote for president. And he's like, I don't discuss that, but I will tell you that my wife is a Republican, but I'm a Christian. And I didn't understand what he said at all. I was like, what? And he just repeated it. And I'm like, no, but I don't understand. Like, I heard you. I don't know what you're saying. And he's like, well, you know, the Republican ideals don't align with what I know to be true about God and Jesus and what's in the Bible. And I'm like, what? So I'm scandalized and thoroughly upset. And I go and I'm like, well, I guess I should investigate this. So because I accidentally learned how to think for myself, being homeschooled, I started way back then reading and understanding what I knew, integrating it with what I also could learn from the world in different ways. And so it's a natural process for me to do that. And I resonate with things that have a spiritual element to it. And I see the truth, like kind of the capital T truth, that comes through in lots and lots of different traditions and practices. Mm-hmm. And I also am able to take what works for me and leave what doesn't anymore. Yeah. So for me, religious structure doesn't work for me, but understanding spiritual concepts and what is true and how, and really honestly, just being okay with taking what makes my life better and allows me to make sense of the world is all I really need to do. So yeah, it's that kind of stuff isn't totally challenging to me because I think I did all the freaking out about it when I was like 19. Yeah.
Well, what's awesome though is like, that is, you have just described in the simplest terms what it means to pivot.
Yeah.
To experience something to the point where you are going to discover what is true for you, what to leave behind, and really allow yourself to not worry about whether something isn't working.
Yeah. And I also think that one of the most beautiful things too is being able to do that in a loving way and like with appreciation for what came before, what was good about it, what you got from it, and an honesty for what isn't working and what isn't right for you. I love all of that. You know, it's a wonderful process and it doesn't have to feel like a ripping apart or, you know, everything that ever happened before is worst garbage and I hate it. You know, like that doesn't have to be true either. It can be really done with appreciation and understanding and a calmness. Like almost all of the time when all of these things happened, besides the time when I realized I was full of rage for years when I quit my job, all of the other times I left something, it was just a very small little shift inside that was like, oh, I'm free from this now. I can do a different thing now. And it was not very interesting or dramatic. It just was what was right at that moment. And honestly, very much about feeling inside my body what was true and really connecting in with the heart and the gut brain that I had been ignoring for so long. So yeah, beautiful stuff. I love pivoting. It's my favorite thing.
Sarai, this has been an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for just showing up and sharing your story, your journey of pivots, and just how you are truly an audacious soul. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been super fun, and I have really loved talking with you.
One of the things that really stood out in this conversation with Sarai was when she was talking about breadcrumbs. She can look in past journals, past articles, and really see a glimpse of who she has become today. Clues and hints, breadcrumbs leading her through this journey. And the question that I have for you as we end this episode, when you look back at your life and work, what breadcrumbs are there, and what breadcrumbs do you need to pay attention to? Where are they leading you to? There are a lot of clues that are there if you truly know where to look for them. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.